Back in time. Okay, so I think we were learning the sugya of the Tosas here on Gimel Amud Beis. I want to just finish up discussing that, and then we'll move on to the next topic. So again, just to remind everybody, we read through the Gemara on Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara was trying to figure out why, under certain conditions, it would be permissible to move the wedding date from the ideal Yom HaRevi, Wednesday, to a Tuesday. Now the Gemara says you can do that for a sakana, and then the Gemara says, if it's an onus, you know, you can even move to a Monday. So the Gemara wanted to establish what is a sakana and what is an onus, right? What are these things? And obviously they can't be the same, otherwise we wouldn't use this different terminology, right? We'd use a consistent terminology. So the question is, what are they? So the Gemara's conclusion with regard to Sakana is that the hegemon came to town, meaning the non-Jewish ruler, came to town, and he made a gzeira, and he said, a nasty gzeira, right? The besula hanises b'yom arvi tivail lahegemon tchila. And the Gemara says that, you know, is called a Sakana because there were people who used to give up their lives rather than submit to that kind of terrible pressure. So the Gemara has a fascinating line where the Gemara says, "Vilidro shlehu de ones shari." If people were giving up their lives and therefore became a sakana, why didn't the chachamim, you know, take out ads in the newspaper or whatever communication, you know, options they had and publicize that you don't have to give up your life under these conditions, right? That's what the Gemara says. And the Gemara answers, well, you know, the wives of Kohanos or Prutzos, it's not such a simple thing because, you know, in the case of Kohanos, there are Asuros Lebaleim, even Onis. In the case of Prutzos, you know, it could have been a pretext for, you know, for Ratzon, and then there really is a Sisa Lebaleim. So, again, it doesn't mean that they're supposed to give up their lives, but the point is that it's, there's an irrevocable, loss here, as it were. And therefore, we call it a sakana. Okay, that part of it is not doesn't interest us so much. What caught the eyes of all the Rishonim was this line in the Gemara, where the Gemara says, "Vilidro shlehu de ones shari." The Gemara said, "People, women don't have to give up their lives. They don't have to martyr themselves, right, in order to avoid, you know, this terrible decree. You know, halachically, they should be able to submit to the coercion." And save their lives. After all, it says, "V'chai bohem v'lo she'yamaspa." That's what the Gemara seems to be saying. So the Rishonim all asked, and we're going to focus again on, just to finish up this Tosas, to go through the Tosas. Tosas says, what are you talking about? Everybody knows the famous Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara in Sanhedrin says that normally the rule is, whenever this kind of a pressured situation, that it's, you know, yavor de'al yehareg, it's better to submit than to give up your life because of Chai Bohem Elo Shemus Bohem, with the exception of three Averos. And they are Shvichas Damim, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos. So doesn't it seem like Gilui Arayos is exactly what we have here? In which case, if we're dealing with Gilui Arayos, so why should, what do you mean, Belidra Shalhu Don Ashari? Belidra Shalhu, that there's a Chi of Yahari Valyavar. That's Tosas's question. So in front of us, in this Tosas, this long Tosas here, we have two answers to this question, which I want to examine a little more fully today. We began last week analyzing it. The two answers are as follows. The first answers are Rabbeinu Tam's. Rabbeinu Tam says that Bias Akum, or Bias Mitzri, he calls it, but it isn't really Mitzri. Mitzri is just a name. Bias Akum Lo Shma Bia, or is Kibias Behema. And therefore, even though there's a chiyuv of Yehareg Valyavor, when it comes to Gilui Arayos, right, ironically, the relationship with a non-Jew, because it's so, you know, off the radar charts in terms of being an acceptable or recognizable relationship, meaning it's so absurd, ki'ilu, that, it doesn't even have the legal status of a relationship, l'chumra. Right? It ends up having certain kulas, even though it's for sure a prohibited relationship, because it's so prohibited, it's just not considered a sufficiently, legal and formal, you know, connection, you know, to trigger the normal dinim of Yehareg Al-Yavor. And then, as we'll see in a moment, Rabbeinu Tam extends this significantly further by connecting it to the question of Yichus. We'll read it inside in just a second, we'll review it. By extending it to Yichus, and then extending it even further to the Isser Leboel, and we'll talk about the Isser Lebal as well. That's the first thing. Let me just chart with what we're going to... That's the first answer. So what we need to understand is, what is the basis of Rabbeinu Tam's position, and in particular, what is the scope of his position? Meaning, what does it apply and what doesn't it apply? And if there are inconsistencies, then to try to understand those inconsistencies. I'll explain in just a minute. That's the first answer. The second part of Tosis, basically, the Rivam who rejects Rabbeinu Tam, so he needs an answer to this question. It's a very telling question. So the answer of the Rivam is that Karka Olam Shaini, meaning women, or at least women certainly who are passive, in this context is the debate, whether it's all women by virtue of the nature of Maisa Bia, per se, or whether it's the fact that she is passive and submitting, but rather than instigating or initiating anything, that's a debate. But either way, women in this context, right, don't have the obligation of Yahoreg Vayavor or Tehoreg Ve'altavor because they are Karka Olam, because their position in this whole dynamic, in this whole interaction, is a passive one. That's the concept of Karka Olam. So we want to talk a little bit about that as well. Is it really true that Karka Olam is exempt from Yahoreg Vayavor? And if so, what are the implications of that? And what about Karka Olam in the context of the other two? Shvichas Damim, right? Avodah Zarah. There's a third answer to this question. There are probably more, but the three I want to mention quickly. And that is the Me'iri here. And it's based on the Bala Ma'or in Sanhedrin. Another reason why V'lidrosh Lehud Onashari, that we don't apply the din of Yahoreg Vayavor. And that is the reason given that Hanos Atzmo Shaini. If the Anos, the person who is pressuring and imposing his will, if he derives pleasure from this, and he's motivated not by the effort to, not by anti-Semitism, in other words, or some other perverse, motivation, right? But it's not a matter that he's trying to undermine your commitment to religion. But Tanos Atzmon, plain old, hedonism, he sees an opportunity, and his, physical pleasure is what is motivating him. So Hanos Atzmon, shiny. That's the answer of the Me'iri in this sugya, based on the Bala Ma'or, who says in Sanhedrin, Dafayin Dalet Amud Beis, that Gilui Arayos, the Hanos Atzmon, is not Yahoreg Vayavor. Okay, so we're going to discuss these three shitos quickly, or as quickly as we can, and then we'll move on to the next topic of Avelos. Okay, so with regard to the first one, again, let's look at the Tosis for a minute. First, let's discuss Rabbeinu Tam. Tosis says here, V'lidrosh Ludon Ashari, the question that I just mentioned, Bim Tomar, Ha'amrinam Perek Ben Soramore, Al Kol Averis, Yavar Val Yehorek, Chutzme Avodas Kochavim Gil Arayos, Shvichus Damim. In all cases, one is obligated, right, to save one's life. That takes priority. The Chai Bohem, sanctity of life. With the exception of three. Right? Gil Arayos, Shvichus Damim, Avodas Ar. Just Agav, just mentioned the comment of the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch says that you shouldn't think that this is a concession, in a way. Or this, in a way, he doesn't say exactly this way, I'm kind of fleshing out a little more. But, don't think that this is a compromise, to the value of quality of life. This is itself an expression of quality of life. In other words, instead of seeing, normally the Chai Bahem, is paramount, when it comes to 610 mitzvos, but there are three, for which it's not. They're more important than life. Okay, so the way the Chinuch has his comment runs is more that these are also quality of life issues. The reason that the Chai Bahem is important is because of quality of life. And if you have to compromise in these three, then the life that you're living is so flawed, so compromised to begin with, that it's not the kind of b'chaima. I think it's a very important, not everybody agrees with this assessment or analysis, but I think it's a very important perspective, hashkafically. Anyways, in other words, we don't see these things as Nebuch, you have to give up your life, although of course it's Nebuch, but what we really see them is the kind of inner limit of a life that is still worth living. In other words, if you have to compromise too much, and if the purpose of life is to develop a relationship with the Rabbeinu Shalom, and to not just breathe the air and pass the time, but to grow spiritually, to find a meaning and so on. Again, that doesn't mean that we don't also appreciate quality of life in situations where there's no choice and it's just physical life. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar people, as we know, are in situations either due to age or injury or illness where their quality of life is very poor. We still consider life to be important. But in the bigger picture, obviously the ability to pursue meaning in life, which is also connected, mostly connected, with religious observance and growing as an Oved Hashem, that determines the reason why the Chai Bahem takes priority. And the reason that the Chai Bahem overrules other mitzvos is not because the other mitzvos aren't important either. It goes in the other direction. It's because whether it's a kind of Chalel, Shabbos Achas, Kadesh Tishmar, Shabbos is Harbe type of mentality, or it's the quality of life per se, but the idea is the same, and that is that the Dveikus, Bashem, whatever you want to call it, the ability in some way to accomplish what religion considers to be important in life, makes the choice a religiously appropriate one. It's not correct to view this is a kind of a Lochem versus Lashem decision. It's a Lashem decision internally. But that's why, occasionally, whether it's the Gimel Averos, or, as we'll see, the situation of Farhesia or Shas HaShmad, when it goes the other way, when it's Yavor, when it's Yaharin, well, Yavor, it's not that we value life any less, it's just, since the reason that we value life is, and I don't mean because of the quantitative opportunity to do things, I mean qualitatively. But there can be situations where the compromise is just too great, and where making the choice, to live under circumstances which reject the purpose of life is just too painful or just too meaningless, to justify the violation or even continuing on. Anyways, the point is that we have these Gimel Averos. So why isn't this an example of it, and why are we saying Belidrash Ludon Hashar? So Tosa says, "V'tirutz Rabbein Tam, de'ein chayav en misal bilas mitzri," what I mentioned before, the relationship, physical relationship with a non-Jew doesn't register. "D'rachmana afkarei lezarei de mitzri." This is already the first interesting point of Tosas. Tosas links the fact that non-Jews are not considered to be fathers to their children from a Jewish perspective. There's no yichus. It's connected with the fact that the ma'isabia is not one that is legally, halachically recognized. As we'll see in a moment, the Rivam says the reason that the child of a Jew and a non-Jewish father is not considered the child of that father is nothing to do with the legality or the description or designation of the ma'isabia. It's a pure yichus question. Rabbeinu Tam seems to be saying, listen, if you recognize this relationship, in terms of its physical component, the legality of the physical component, right, then to be consistent, you would also have to recognize, the yichus of the father. One goes hand in hand. It's a chiddush of Rabbeinu Tam to say that the recognition of parenthood legally and the recognition of the physical relationship are one and the same. In a way, he elevates the physical relationship, ironically, by doing that. People misunderstand the thrust of Rabbeinu Tam. Anyways, that's the first extension. Bias Akum is Kibias Behema, Afkare, Kazrachmana Afkare Lazari. Tchsiv is Zirmas Susim Zirmasa. Umaisi Raya, is what's his proof? The parak betzora mora ha Esther far hesyahava, because the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, didn't everybody know that Esther, you know, good, you know, she went to Beis Yaakov, everybody knew her, you know, all of a sudden she's married to Achashverosh, so who didn't understand, you know, what was going on there? So that's Farhesia. We know that there's a chi of Yehari Gval Yavor, right, under three sets of circumstances. One is the three cases, but that's one, right? There are three Averos which themselves trigger Yehari Gval Yavor, Avarazar Gileraz Shechastamim. Then there is the the factor of Farhesia, whenever there's a Pirsum, whenever 10 Jews are either present or aware, that's a debate, exactly how to define it, of what it is that's happening, that also is Yehari Vayavar, even in a mitzvah kala, or Shas HaShmad, a time of religious crisis, even if it's not Farhesia, and even if it's not the Gimel Averos. Those are the three sets of circumstances. So when the Gemara in Sanhedrin asks about Esther, as all the Rishonim wonder or are bothered, how come the Gemara in Sanhedrin said everybody knew about Esther, she should have given up her life? Right? They should have asked a more basic question. Esther was involved in Gilui Arayos, she should have given up her life, it's one of the Gimel Mitzvos. Why do they focus on Farhesia when a more basic question should have been about Gilui Arayos? So Rabbi Natan says, V'lo parich, but Esther Gilui Arayos, mashma de mishum Arayos, lo have mechaiva, because she was involved with Achashverosh. And he's a non-Jew, and therefore Jewish law doesn't recognize not only the yichus of a father in that circumstance, because he's from a different religion, they consider, you know, this religion and that religion as if it's almost two different, species. So it's kibias behema. They don't consider the maisa bia to be serious either. Umitoch kach, but then comes the third application. All right, one is Gilui Arayos, maisa bia. The other is Rachmana afkare lazare no yichus, right? Now comes the third one. The third one is very problematic, or very exciting, say it that way, very challenging. Umitoch kach hitzer Rabbeinu Tam lebas Yisrael shehimira uba aleha ove kachavim lekaima laosa ove kachavim kishin is gayer. And everybody's going to ask me in a minute. The loshayich lomemar echad abal v'echad aboel bebias mitzri dehave kebias behema. What does this mean? Normally we have a rule that if a woman is involved with another man in the context of her marriage, right? And that is called usually sota. So she is then, if she violated her marriage vows, baratzon, so it's asur labal, v'asur laboel. She cannot return to that marriage, right? Since she voluntarily betrayed him. And in addition, she can never marry, right, the homewrecker, the person with whom she betrayed her husband. That's the Isur Laboel. So then Rabbeinu Tam says, what happens in a case where she was involved with a non-Jew in the context of her marriage? So you might think that if that non-Jew later on became a ger, so that now he theoretically is marriageable material, right? That we should apply the rule of Isur Laboel, since he's the one who broke up her marriage, presumably. The answer is bias akum is kibias behema. When they were involved, right, it was off the radar screen, right? And therefore, the Isur Laboel doesn't apply. And when Bartholomew becomes a Benjamin, right, he becomes Jewish, he can now be her husband. That's the chiddush of Rabbeinu Tam. Okay. Now, why do I say that's problematic? It's problematic from several points of view. Right. The biggest question is the question that I thought everybody was going to ask. I don't remember if anybody asked last week. What's that? Gershon is Geyer, Kekatan Shanoa Dami. By which I assume what you're asking is, he's a new person and therefore Rabbeinu Tam's right or Rabbeinu Tam's wrong? He's right, but he's not right for his reason.
Right.
Rabbeinu Tam should be right. Everybody should agree to Rabbeinu Tam, but not because of Rabbeinu Tam's reasoning. In other words, Bartholomew broke up, Rivka Sarah's marriage to Avraham Yitzchak. Right? But he's gone, he doesn't exist anymore. Because he became Binyamin, and Gershon is Geyer, is Kekotan Shadol Adami. Right? To use the paraphrased language of the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, which is not talking about a Ger even, this person who did Tshuva, right? Eini Oso Aish Shashasa Osam Hamasim, says the Rambam. About somebody who does Tshuva, and says about himself, I'm not that person anymore. Right? So Gershon is Geyer, Kekotan Shadol Adami. So of course he should be able to marry her, but nothing has nothing to do with Rabbeinu Tam. Has nothing to do with what took place. Let's say what took place at the time was a Maisa Bia Gemura. The Koladeos. Right? But it still happened to a different person. He didn't exist, Binyamin. Right? He was a non-Jewish Bartholomew at the time. So that, interestingly enough, the Ritva quotes in the name of Rabbeinu Yechiel, and Tosis and Sota on Daf Yedal and Omid Beis also quotes the Shita that saying, you know, Rabbeinu Tam is right, but he's not right for his reasons, he's right for these reasons. Gershon is Geyer, Kekotan Shenol Adam. But we're going to see in a second that the Rivam does not like Rabbeinu Tam's reasoning, and he also doesn't like Rabbeinu Tam's conclusion. He thinks it's wrong. He thinks the former Bartholomew, the present Binyamin, is Asur B'Toras Boel. So the question for, we'll read it inside one more minute, and then I'll discuss the other question too. The question is, if that's the case, what happened to the rule of Gershon Isgar, Gekotan Shenola, yeah?
Why is it considered Ela if it's Achur Lazarev?
It's not, that's his point. And therefore there's no Issa the Boel. That's Rabbeinu Tam saying. Rabbeinu Tam is saying there's no Issa the Boel, what?
But in general.
Yeah, no. Everybody agrees Afkar Elazare in the sense of Yichus,
right,
but not in the sense of Maisabiyah. That's what we're going to see in the Rivam in a minute. So let's read the Rivam in a minute. So you understand already, Rabbeinu Tam came up with this psak of Rabbeinu Tam basically is a kind of an interesting thing because we think it's, our instinct is that it's totally right, but for a totally different reason. So now the question is, why didn't he take the normal reason, and then why did the Rishonim think he's wrong? Not just think he's wrong. Why do they think he's? Why do they think another reason is wrong too?
Wouldn't there be a difference for the Isur Labaul?
Oh, excellent. So the other issue in Rabbeinu Tam to talk about is what's the story with the Isur Labaul? Okay. So as we're going to see in just a moment, it's interesting. Rabbeinu Tam doesn't say anything explicit about that, right? But what is fascinating is, as we're going to read it in a minute, the Rivam in Artosis assumes that even according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's an Isur Labaul. If that's true, meaning this illicit liaison with the non-Jew, which Rabbeinu Tam by saying Afkare Lazare and saying Kibias Behema, there's no Yaring Vayavor, and saying there's no Issa Leboel, gives the impression that it's as if it's a Maisa Behema. So why is there an Issa Leboel? Well, if a woman had an interaction with a behemoth, which is also a terrible violation, right? But it's not something that occasions Issa Labaal, right? So if indeed there is an Issa Labaal here, where's the consistency in Rabbeinu Tam? How come all of a sudden when it comes to Issa Labaal, this is on the radar screen in regard to the other three issues, Yoharik Valyavor, Afkare Lazare, and Issa Leboel, it's not. On the other hand, if you take the other perspective, which is the view of the Me'iri Al-Atar says that Rabbeinu Tam thinks that there's no Issa Leboel either. Now, that at least is conceptually consistent, meaning that if he thinks it's Bias Behema, then it's Bias Behema. So plug in Bias Behema for all these dinim, there's no Issa Leboel. The problem is it's against a lot of Gemaras. Why is it against a lot of Gemaras? It's against a little bit, unless you come up with an explanation, our Gemara, and many other Gemaras too. Why is it against our Gemara? Our Gemara says that we're worried about Kohanos, and we're worried about Prutzos, in saying basic, which basically means that if she's involved with this hegemon, right, for Beratzon, Or if she's a Kohenes, she's a Surah Labala, even though he's a non-Jew. So this our Gemara almost explicitly seems to say, and there are other Gemaras too, which we'll soon see, that there's an Issur Labala. There has to be an Issur Labala in Akum, even according to Rabbeinu Tam. So what I'm saying is you have two bad options in Rabbeinu Tam. One is to try to explain this inconsistency, which I'm going to try to explain in just a minute. And the other is to assume that Rabbeinu Tam is conceptually consistent, but then you have a bit of a nightmare. Now, there are some Mefarshim, Shidim Gubetzes, who take on the challenge to try to answer every single Gemara for Rabbeinu Tam, if Rabbeinu Tam doesn't really think there's an Issur Labala. So there is such a view. The Trumas Hadeshin is mistapek about Rabbeinu Tam. Yeah.
But Kohanis, you can say that it's the Issur Kehuna. It's not the Issur of Yishem Shasur Labal.
No, it is.
Kohen cannot marry a woman that
right.
that had...
Okay, I mean, that's an interesting ha'ara. The question is whether it's true or not. Meaning, is it that when it comes to Kohuna, the Issur Labal applies even Ba'ones? Or is it a separate Issur Kohuna? That's an interesting Lamzisha question. It is a separate issue. But it doesn't really matter for us right now because I just was trying to give, you know, two examples, Kohanos and Prutzos. The Gemara says Prutzos, trying Kohanos.
Well, so, why doesn't anybody mention Am HaDom L'Chamor?
Well, Zirmas Susim Zirmasam is that. But it's same idea. The Gemara in the Kiddushin. The Gemara says about, you know, Mikar Behema Hachadas Acheres. Yeah. Ima Chamor. The Gemara quotes it in Kiddushin when it talks about Harat Mukudeshesli Kishet Tizgairi. So the Gemara says, well, is that a Dover Shalom Aliolam or not? So the Gemara says, a temptation poe Ima Chamor. You know, they do quote it. Yeah.
Why did the Ger on this guy here stand in a better status than the Yehudis that did Tshuva?
In what respect?
In other words, you're saying Bartholomew becomes Benjamin.
Right.
I'm saying Benjamin Chote becomes Benjamin who became a Baal Tshuva.
No, I'm only talking, I was just giving, I was just, you know, being a little hyperbolic.
Yes,
you know,
so.
But no. It's not a question of better. We're just talking about the change in status, the transformation. You understand that, you know, a Jew's past is his past. It may not be, Ein Mas Kir Lo Avonosav. Maybe we shouldn't bring it up all the time. But he can't escape his past. In the sense that we'll discuss in a minute whether a ger can really escape his past either. But the point is, he doesn't take on it. When a person takes a new identity on in tshuva, that's a much more subtle thing. I mean, he was mechuyev before, he's mechuyev now. He had the stature and the status of a Jew before, and he does now. We're just saying, you know, even in tshuva, the Rambam uses that, description. When he wants to show, tshuva is a transforming process. But a ger is legally, he belonged to a different religion, right? He was not obligated. He didn't have, you know, the status and the stature to be involved in a certain thing. He just was living in a different society, you know, and that's a much bigger leap. It has nothing to do with his personality. It can be a wonderful, ger toshav. He could be a ben noach. He can be the nicest and best person ever, but he's still not obligated in Taryag Mitzvot. He still, therefore, doesn't have the capacity of, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zel Azeh, as a Bar Chiyuva. The change is much more dramatic and much more legally discernible. Yeah.
It seems to me that Chazal say, Kishen Shasur Labaka Chasur Laboel.
Yeah. They connect them.
Issur Labal can't exist in a vacuum.
So that's part of the question too.
No, Issur Labal.
Well, that's the question. That's the question.
Yeah, but the Kishem means that there's a relationship.
Right. So you ask me about Kishem. Let me answer you very quickly. It's part of this question, but it's a big topic also. Meaning there are two ways. The word Kishem, whenever you have a kit or a Kishem, it's always a loaded term. And it always can be understood in multiple ways. One way to understand it is, there's no causal relationship between the two. There's just a common denominator relationship between the two. Meaning, this single action has two impacts. And if it qualifies for one, it usually qualifies for the other. Not because one causes or is a result of the other, but because both of them flow usually from the same status. That's one way to understand kishet. But there's no per se, you know, they're dependent, and in theory, there might be circumstances where for some technical reason, you know, you split the two, right? Somebody's not a bar chiyuva, whatever. So this is a huge issue. I'll explain, give you a couple quick nafkaminas since you brought it up in a minute. The other way to explain kishem is that there's a causal relationship. And in this particular case, I would say as follows. If there's going to be a causal relationship, it's going to be in the direction of the boel being a result of the ba. But that home wrecker, he's going to be your next husband? Shehechote niskar? No. Either as a knas doraisa, or it doesn't have to be a knas doraisa even. It could just be a hagdara in Kedushas Ha'ishas. Meaning, you know, you have a history, you have a bad history with this person. A history which is built on tarnishing Kedushas Ha'ishas. Right? I'm not saying somebody who tarnished Kedushas Ha'ishas can never marry anyone. But the two of you together tarnished Kedushas, that's how you started off. That disqualifies the two of you from entering, I wouldn't say holy matrimony, that, you know, they other people took that one. But, you know, Kedushas Ha'ishas. Now that's not a Shlo Yechote Niskar, right? But I think it's a very interesting and even compelling way to look at the Isur Labal, but still one which is, if it's a Knas Daraisa, it's certainly caused by Isur Labal, right? If it's what I just described, I don't know if it's caused by Isur Labal, but certainly it's close to having been caused by Isur Labal. Let's put it that way. That's different than saying, you know what, there are two things that are happening here. There's something happening in her marriage, and there's also something happening about, disqualifying, you know, this person. But the common denominator is still, let's say, Emaisabia. Okay, so this is a big issue too. Since I mentioned it, let's say one is Mazen and the other is Shokeg. You know, the Boel and the Nivellus. Let's say he doesn't know, you know, that she was married. Okay? Or she, let's say, thought she was a Kohenes, she was an Anusa. Right? Under those conditions, does it matter? Is there still Echad L'Baal v'Echad L'Baal? There's a huge Mishnah L'Melech in Hilchos Sota that discusses this question. Even though we say Kishem, you know, Sh'Osor L'Baal, Kach Osor L'Boel, can you ever split them? Under what conditions can you split them? But surely this is very important for a bit of time here too. Okay, so let's read the Rivam quickly. V'Einir L'Rivam. Ha Ayidei Biasakum Nasr L'Baala. Here, the Tosis Rivam, the Rivam in this Tosis, assumes that even according to Rabbeinu Tam, there is an Isur Labal. Kedamar HaChadika Prutzos, the Raya that I brought before. Interesting, he didn't bring the Raya from Kohanos like I did, maybe because he held like you, right? Uveperik HaIsha Shenesarim, another Gemara. Gaba Isha Shenechpesha Bein HaAkum. She's held captive by non-Jews. That's, we know that, Shvuya. So we're always worried that there was a physical relationship developed, and especially, you know, if it had been Baratzon, she'd be Asura Labaila. But if we're talking about a non-Jew, Arminan de Baratzon Asura Labaila. If it's a non-Jew, what do we care? Parminanami b'Megila, right, you know, Kasher Avadati, that's the Chazal say, right? Kasher Avadati, Avadati, that she, meaning Esther, was the wife of Mordechai. Right? Kasher vadati mi beis abba vadati mimcha. Alma legabe baila lo chashiva bilas mitzri kibias behema. So we see when it comes to Isur Labal that Rabbeinu Tam is not consistent. This is the Rivam's take on Rabbeinu Tam, right? And if that's the case, suadin leboel. Now does he mean causally? Right? If the whole din of Isur Labal is because he's a homewrecker, Knas Daraisa, or what I said. So, isn't that what happened here? Right? Or is the common denominator bias? Is bias akum ke bias behema or not? Be consistent. After all, afagav de ein znus le behema, de ein bias behema, poselas bioseres. If you want us to take seriously Rabbeinu Tam's comment, so plug it in and let it be judged on its own merits. Meaning, if bias akum is ke bias behema, there shouldn't be an isul abal, because there's no bias isul. Again, it's a very depraved thing, and there's, you know, an onesh, you know, it's a capital offense if it's done beidim bahasra, bias behema, that is, not whitewashing it ki uzeh. But the point is, there's no isul abal. And by the way, the reason there's no isul abal, because off the radar screen, it's nutty, you know, and it's certainly not a marriage issue, you know, another candidate or, you know, rival, you know, can destroy a marriage. You know, depravity is just that. Anyways, Kramin and Perakab Olivemto, Bias Mitzri, Havabia. What about the Rabbeinu Tam's argument about Yichus, right? The Chiafgrech, Monolazare, Hanimilil Inyan, De Ainlo Yichus. The Zara Chashuv, Kazer Behema. But that has nothing to do with the Maisa Bia being. It's a regular physical Bia. And legally, you know, since he's from a different religion, we don't recognize him as the father. It's not only genetic, it's not only physiological, it's also a spiritual bond. And we think that spiritual bond cannot traverse, right, the cultural, religious, spiritual, gap, you know, of two religions. That's the Rivam. So then how do you explain the Gemara? We'll get back to that. Okay. So I just want to take a couple of minutes to explain Rabbeinu Tam. So how would we explain it? Again, if you take the Meiri view, you just have a lot of problem with a lot of Gemaras, but at least Rabbeinu Tam is consistent. If you take the view, the prevalent view, of our printed Tosis and most Rishonim, which is that even Rabbeinu Tam agrees there's a difference between Yisrael Baal and Yisrael Boel, how can it be? Where's the consistency? That's question number one. Question number two is the one that we asked before. Even if you want to accept Rabbeinu Tam's Psak, do it on the basis of Gershon Iskayer, Kikotan, Shanola. I should mention that the Rush Alatar here, if we have a chance we'll read it, if not we'll leave it, but I'll just mention it. Rabbeinu Tam says, the Rush says, I think that Rabbeinu Tam's psak about the Boel is correct. But again, not for that reason. And not, doesn't mention the other reason either, Gershon Iskayer. So I have a third reason. What's the third reason? Very fascinating. There's no Isul Boel argues, based on the reading of a Gemara in Sota, but it's not Mukhrach at all from that Gemara. But the way Rosh says it is, the Isul Boel only applies if the only disqualification for that person is the fact that she is married. But if there's another disqualification at that time, then there's no Isul Boel. And then, if that other disqualification goes away, then he can marry her. Says the Rush. In this particular case, the guy, the Boel, is a guy. So the reason that she is prohibited to be involved with him is not only because she's married, but also because he, you know, is of a certain stature that is prohibited to her, right? So the Isul Boel doesn't apply. Again, what's the idea behind it, I'm guessing? Again, the same, similar to, it's like a variation, not a, you know, compelling variation particularly, but it's a variation of what I said before. Meaning, if their relationship, you know, as, you know, from a marriage point of view, right, starts off by destroying, you know, her marriage, then they're not marriageable material. But if there's a distraction in a way, meaning if the first thing you look at is not just she's a married woman, but you say he's off the radar screen. He's He's not marriageable. If her involvement in her marriage, destroying her marriage, is with somebody who's not marriageable, right? Ironically, then, you know, the impact that that has on disqualifying him, you know, as being marriageable by virtue of this, doesn't happen. That's the view of the Rosh. The Rosh says, Rabbeinu Tam's right about the bowl, is psak about the bowl is correct, but it has nothing to do with Bias Behema. It has to do with the Issa Leboel only applying when the only issue, right, is her status of Eshesh. That's the Rosh. Okay. So let's add, what can we say about the two questions? We have in front of us.
The Rosh obviously holds that there's an Isur Labal.
The what?
The Rosh holds that there's an Isur Labal.
He certainly thinks there's an Isur Labal. Yeah, that's not the issue. He's just saying Isur Laboel always depends on him otherwise being, you know, Ra'oi Le'ishas. And if he's not Ra'oi Le'ishas, then there's no Isur Laboel, even if later on what made him disqualified goes away. Like in this case, Geirus. Oh, okay. So I think the answer is very simple. And it goes as follows. Why'd you shake your head?
Because Geirus changes his total status. Okay. It goes away. He's a new person.
Right, okay.
That's not changing the status.
No. I mean, the Rosh? The Rosh is only saying...
Status, for example.
The Rosh is only saying that the Iser Boel can only apply to an otherwise potentially marriageable person, and he was a guy, so he wasn't that. So now, a month later, when he's Binyamin, right, he's not saddled by being the Boel, because when he was the Boel, he was also an Akom. That's what I said. Okay, that's the Rosh. Okay, but let's get back to these two questions. I think the answer is very it's subtle, but it's simple, and that is as follows. This question, obviously, the physical act, you know, of Maisa Bia is no different between a Jew and a non-Jew. That's clear, unlike Behema, you know, obviously. When we say, what Rabbeinu Tam says, Bias Akum can Bias Behema, it's not a racial comment, Chas V'Shalom. It's a religious comment. And it's a fascinating one, meaning we view, you know, Jewish life as a, you know, not just, oh, we're human beings and we're also Jews and you know, these are the things that we do as Jews. We view them in a transformative way. We're also human beings, which we'll get back to. That's critical to this presentation, too. But the point is that it's a qualitative difference. Different people are from totally different societies, right? That affects the way that we look. It says something about how Rabbeinu Tam looks at Maisa Bia, frankly, as a legal, formal, spiritual, you know, kind of an action. Anyways, so that idea... But of course, physically, you know, there's a recognition that that's not true. So I think the point is as follows: when any time we zero in on the personality or the personalities involved in this illicit encounter, we say bias akum can bias behema. Whenever the face and the identity are irrelevant, and what's important is not who the partner is or who the personalities involved in the illicit behavior is, right? What's important is the act of betrayal per se, the fact that an illicit, you know, Maisa Bia took place outside of the marriage, when that is what we're considering, we no longer look at it as Bias Akum and Bias Behema. In other words, the Iser Leboel and the Yichus of the Akum as a father are all about zeroing in on the role of the Boel, the identity of the Boel. And that's apples and oranges. We don't recognize that. But the Isa Labal, what's important in Isa Labal is not who she betrayed him with. He might be interested, he might not. You know, that's just jealousy and other things, but that's irrelevant completely. What's relevant, it's nameless and faceless. Now, I'm not saying we don't know who. Right, but legally, conceptually, what's important is it wasn't her husband. Anybody but. It was outside. Whenever the personality matters, we say Bias Akum can Bias Behema. whenever anybody but the husband matters, we don't say b'yad lakum k'nes behema. Now, if this is the case, let me take it a step further. Let's address, so that's to explain why there's an isa l'baal, right, even though there's no isa l'boel. Right? We say b'yad lakum k'nes behema, about the boel and the ichus and the arig bal yavor, right, but we don't say it about isa l'baal. She betrayed her husband. She did a physical act of bia outside of her marriage. Who cares who it was with? Oh. So what about Gershon Iskari Kakotan? Why not Rabbeinu Tam just say Gershon Iskari Kakotan Shinola Dami? Well, maybe he even partially means it, but oh, let me start in a different way. How come the Rivam didn't at least say Gershon Iskari Kakotan Shinola Dami? At least the Ritva, the name of Rabbeinu Yechiel, did. Right, so we have two questions. Why does the Rivam not say it? And why does the Rabbeinu Tam, who says this psak, not based on Gershon is Gai Shkadish Shinov. Oh. So I alluded to it a little before also, meaning, can a man really escape his personal history by Geirus? We talked about Tshuva, right? You're not supposed to remind the Baal Tshuva of all the Chatoim that he did, but he's supposed to remember it, and every Yom Kippur is supposed to do Vidui on the Chatoim of your previous years, right? He did them. And for the rest of his life, he has to be a little more cognizant, and a little bit more scrupulous, you know, in those areas, because he knows he has a certain vulnerability, and he always feels a certain inadequacy, you know, and that he needs to compensate for a little bit in those areas, right? And what about a Gershon Iskayer? So let's say you have a Ben Noach, non-Jew, and he... He did something which makes him chayv misa as a ben Noach, so we can just be misgayer and get out of it. No. And what about the fact that there's a debate in the Gemara about Pirei Merivya or Yerusha, Bechor? Right, there are certain issues where the Gemara debates, or where there are different deos, where it seems like we don't necessarily say Gershon Iskayer Kakotan Shino. He had children before, as Bartholomew. Bartholomew had children. Right? So Binyamin is obligated to Pirei Merivya or not? Machlokas. Right? He had a Bechor. Right? Now he's Binyamin and he has a new child, a new marriage. Right? That's the Bechor or not? Remember the Gershon's guy, Kohan Shanola Dami? He's a completely different person, right? Oh. So the answer is that to the extent, right, as long as we're focusing on, you know, matters of religion and status and stature, Gershon's guy is Kohan Shanola Dami. But to the extent that there are certain issues where we as Jews, you know, also understand that we're also human beings, and we also recognize the world of Bnei Noach and Gerei Toshav, and so on, there are certain carryovers from that world as well. So, for example, according to the view that that he doesn't have a key of a period of Arivia, what we're really saying, we're recognizing that he already, as a human being, he already populated the world. He made a contribution in that regard. Right? We're recognizing that in a previous life, you know, but we're still recognizing and tracing it, he had children. Right? The point is that the Rubicon, if you will, between Jewishness and non-Jewishness is very huge. And, you know, there's no going back. Once he's Makabel, you know, Kabbalah Samach Shemaim, and he's Nichnas Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. I'm not talking about Ger Katan. You know, it's a Sugya Dafid Aleph. I hope we'll get there at some point. But, you know, a Ger Sherotza Lachzor Lesuro, but he was a sincere Ger. He said, oh, I changed my mind. You know, he's a Yisrael. Meshumad. He's not a Goy. There's no going back. But that doesn't mean that we don't recognize on the human level, you know, and that's the key formulation. You have to figure out what is noveya from the human level and isn't a contradiction to his new assumption of Yahadus from a religious point of view. Anything to do with religion, you know, and personal identity, and most things do, right? That's the comprehensiveness of Kedushas Yisrael. So anything having to do with that, he's Kekatan Shano Adami. But to the extent that there are certain things which are more universalist, which we recognized, which we do recognize, right? He's not Kekatan Shano Adami. Oh. So if that's the case, maybe this is the pshat in Rabbeinu Tam, well, or the Rivam. Anybody who doesn't like Gershon is Gaira Kekatan Shano Adami. Let's take the Rivam, make it easier. The Rivam might say to you, listen, Bias Akvam is not Kebias Behema. That's the view of the Rivam, right? It's true he's from another religion, but he's not a Behema. And we don't view this interaction. It's true, it's an illegal interaction. He's not somebody she can marry. Not a candidate for that. He's off that radar screen. But the Maisa Bia is still a Bias Ish. Maybe that's enough. You know, he's still a homewrecker with the action that he did. And as a homewrecker, right, that Issa Leboel doesn't go away when he becomes Binyamin. Because the status of homewrecker is something which traverses the religions. It has to do with the Maisabiyah. So Rabbeinu Tam might say to you, maybe if you really want to get fancy, maybe that's the pshat in Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam saying, because I believe that Bias, if I didn't believe Bias Akum to be Bias Behema, then I would agree with you that the din of Gershon Isgayer Kekatan Shanola Dami doesn't apply here. Because I would be saying that there's no Rubicon when it comes to Maisa Bia. There's a Rubicon in Yichlos, there's a Rubicon in other things, but this isn't Bias Behema. If I agreed there was a Harig Val Yavor, right, then I would say to you, there's an Issa Leboel. But I'm telling you, there's no Issa Leboel. You know why? Because it could be Bias Behema. And therefore, you don't need to say even Gershon Isgayer, or therefore you do say Gershon Isgayer. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you need to say the combination, or you could say either one, but it doesn't matter. And the other Rishonim say no. You know, it's one thing to say that there's a Maisa Bia, let's say the Ritva and Rabbeinu Yechiel and so on. But, you know, there could be a Maisa Bia, it doesn't mean that there's a Gavra, that the Gavra Boel, you know, is the same Gavra. There we say, Gershon's, he didn't have Isurim before, although Eshashish is an Isur Ben Noach too, but not in the same way, maybe. So Gershon is Gair, Katan Shadol Adami. So I think that's really the issue. Interesting, one other point.
Well, what would be the discussion of a basula that was nivellus by a goy, which should be asur to a coin?
Say that again. Whoa.
A basula that's nivellus by a goy,
okay,
which should be asur to a coin.
Yeah.
Because she's not a basula anymore.
Well, she's also a zona.
Probably no, worse. It's a bonus.
Bonus? Be a double. Wait a minute, bonus.
Why can't it be bonus?
Well, the bonus has a positive connotation.
Well, what?
Has a positive connotation. I mean, a facetious bonus.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, would she be a steward to a coin? Is she considered a basula?
No.
Absolutely not. I mean, you're asking if...
No, if she's nivellus by a goy, is she considered a basula or not? Is it a maisa bia or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say she's also a zona. I mean, you're asking me according to Rabbeinu Tam.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. So I would answer the same way that I'm answering for... number one, here you don't get to the question because being involved with a goy, as I say, makes her a zona. So we do recognize that... You can't say it's not on the radar screen. It's a separate... what you're calling a bonus, you know, gives it quotation marks. We recognize that. We recognize it as an Iser. But in addition to that, I would also say what I've been saying, which is she's physically a ba'ula. Some people think even Mukasaitz is physically a ba'ula, right? But even if you don't know Mikvaseitz, meaning vis-a-vis her physical status, irrespective of, we don't care how she became a Ba'ula, we care about the fact that she's a Ba'ula, so then the guy is not Kemuna. What? No, that's it. That's a special thing later. But, right, so the answer is, we don't care how, we care that. Whenever we care that, not how, then we're not relating to personalities. It's exactly the same idea. But I'm saying, in addition to that, there's another factor in that zone. What? Yeah, I'm saying about Issa Labal for Rabbeinu Tam certainly could be applied to the Hagdara of Ba'ula for Rabbeinu Tam. That's what I'm saying. But in addition to that, there's also the fact that the Halacha itself recognized that this is part of the Hagdara of Zona, which has a special Issa LaKohanim. So of course they recognize.
You're saying Rabbeinu Tam doesn't know whether he needs both of those.
No, I didn't say Rabbeinu Tam doesn't know. I said, I'm trying to explain a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Rabbeinu Tam has a certain psak about Boel, which one would have thought, could have been said easier in terms of Gershon's guy called Shinoah. I'm trying to explain that either he actually means that, but it only works if he also explains Bias Akum Kibias Behema, because Bias Akum Kibias Behema is the linchpin for saying that this isn't a universal or humanistic. The whole point is that we're being very restrictive in our definitions here.
My point is that unless you say that, you wind up with a conclusion that, again, the Nachri has an enhanced... His violation of the issues is reparable, and that had he been a Yehudi, it would have been impossible. The violation.
Well, that's true either way.
By me?
That's true, according to Rabbeinu Tam. I mean, the Echa the Boel is not does not apply here. There's no Issa LaBoel. But we understand it. Why? Because, again, it flows from his being so inappropriate that he's not even a rival who gets disqualified as a rival. Right? I mean, there's an irony in it all, but it's an understandable irony. I'm just trying to explain why didn't you just say Gerich Shizgarik Bechot Nishanola? And I'm trying to explain that, I think Rabbeinu Tam might answer you and say to you that if I was wrong about Bias Akum Kibias Behema, if it wasn't for that, then there wouldn't be Gershon Izgarik or Katan Shinola Dami either. I'm just not sure that the Rabbeinu Tam's then would go on and say, what I mean by linking this to Bias Behema is, and therefore it's Gershon Izgarik or Katan Shinola Dami, or what he's saying is, I don't even need that because now there are two reasons. Number one, it's Gershon Izgarik or Katan Shinola, but before we even get that, it doesn't make a difference because there was never an Issa Boel to begin with, so it's even more basic. That's what I'm not sure about. But what I'm trying to explain is that for Rabbeinu Tam, there's a link between what he is saying and why, for him, Gershon Izgayer is a palatable argument. Whereas the Rivam, who rejects Rabbeinu Tam's psak and still doesn't apply Gershon Izgayer, I think is consistent and will tell you that I'm not going to apply Gershon Izgayer in an area where inter-Jewish, Gentile, interactions are recognized by the halacha. If there's an Issa LaBaal and it's considered a Ma'asabiya, then in vis-a-vis this, it's not Gershon Izgayer. That's my suggestion. Yeah.
Isn't there a tshuva from the Note of Yehuda with the text of Beis Yaakov about a woman that was accosted in the forest and she volunteered to go to the Goyims to save the life of the Jews?
Yeah.
And Karkolim?
That's a whole big... we're not in the Karkolim. That's a big... there were a number of cases like that. Question is whether that's still Karkolim. Because she took the initiative in that case. That's kind of what I was alluding to also. There seems to be a debate mostly between Balei Tosas and the Chachmei Svarad on that issue. In other words, Balei Tosas seem to think that Karka Olam is an objective question about Maisa Bia. I mean, she's always the novellas. It doesn't matter whether she takes initiative, to entice It may be religiously motivated, like in this case, right? Self-sacrificing. In the end of the day, it's always karka olam. That seems to be the view of the Bali Tosfos. Whereas the Chachmei Sfarad, Ramban, Rashba, that whole school, the Ra'ah, they seem to say that, well, you know, it actually depends on, in other words, the enticement and the incitement, even though it isn't technically part of the physical Maisabia, counts for Kovase as well. Okay, I was going to speak about Kinu Stira, but I'm going to leave that for now. So let me just say something about Karka Olam as we... So Tosfos does suggest that what we're talking about is Karka Olam, and Tosfos has this interesting Ha'ara. Let's just read this for one more minute. The Yeshom Hachi Parish, the Lishu Da'onis Shari, She'isha Karka Olam, V'lo'avda Maisa, Ken Mishani Perk B'tzara Mor, Esther Karka Olam Maisa, V'hadla Parachasam Gili Arayos. This is an important line. The pshitale the ikalishnuye karka olam hi the enolim sar atzma avlin and chil lashem lohayanira lo sheyoil tam the karka olam umeshani karka olam isafilu chil lashem lek. So what is that? Tosfos again is going back to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which, as we noted, says that asks the question: Esther farhes yahave. Why didn't they say Esther? So Rabbeinu Tam has his answer, right? Bias Akum can bias Behemoth. But if you don't hold like Rabbeinu Tam, and you hold Bias Akum as Bias Adam, Ragil, right? So then the question remains. So the answer of the Rivam of Bali Tosfos is Karka Olam. Oh. But that doesn't answer the question. Why did the Gemara ask from Farhesia? More than Gilei Arayah, still question. So then Tosfos has the following interesting comment. Tosfos says that Karka Olam should neutralize the obligation of Yehorig Vayavor in the Gimel Averos is more obvious than that it should neutralize the obligation of Yehorig Vayavor due to Farhesia. One might have thought that if the reason you have to give up your life, you have to exercise martyrdom, is because of Farhesia, that Karka Olam won't help you. It doesn't mitigate it. Only if it's because of the Gimel Averos, does Karka Olam a factor. Kamash Mulan, it's not true. Even in Farhesia, Karka Olam's a factor. Why?
Karka Olam is a factor, you said?
Karka Olam a factor is a factor in both.
In Farhesia also.
In Farhesia too. But the reason the Gemara says Farhesia is because it's almost like the Gemara already went through the Cheshbon. The Gemara said, Esther Gili Arayos Karka Olam. Aye, but it's also Farhesia. Maybe Karka Olam doesn't work there, right? In that tone too, right? So then the Gemara said, no, it works there too. So what is that all about? So clearly, probably what Tosfos means is that there are two perspectives on Yehorig Vayavor. In other words, the difference. The question is, how do we understand the three sets? The truth is, you could ask this question even within the Gimel Averos, but all the cases of Yehorig Vayavor are the same. Or there are different types of Yehorig Vayavor. And if there are different types, where do you draw the line? And by which I mean, Shas HaShmad, there's Farhesia, and there's Gimel Averos. And in Gimel Averos, there are Gimel Averos, right? There's Shvichas Damim, based on a Svara, and there's Avodah Zarah, based on V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, right? And there's Gilei Arayos, which actually is learned out from Shvichas Damim. Even though Shvichas Damim is learned out of Svara, the Svara doesn't apply to Gilei Arayos so much. But anyways, it's an interesting phenomenon, just from a drasha's point of view. Okay, what are the two basic perspectives? The two basic perspectives are the reason that the Zechiv Yehorig Vayavor is because of Chilul Hashem. In other words, you would always say V'chai Bahem V'lo Shiyamus Bahem. But Chilul Hashem is very overriding. And the reason that Chilul Hashem is very overriding is because Chilul Hashem, as Chazal point out many times, is something which is out of your control. It's the impact on others. You can't answer for that fully. You can't atone for that fully. But you did something that undermined other people's religious sensitivity or religious commitment. So what are you going to do? Klap al-chein. from here to bang your head against the wall, you know, do tshuvas amishkal, whatever it is that you'll do, right, absent, you know, finding each one of those people, you know, and making sure, you know, if that's something is even possible, you know, that that you know, you counteract that negative influence. Or that's why some of the mepharshim say really very severe things about Chilul Hashem. You know, ain't a love tshuva. Really, I mean, you understand why. Anything between me and the Rabbanu Shalom, or even me and a single neighbor, or anything that's concrete, you know, you can compensate for. You can buy it and sell it. You can reverse it. There are things you can do. But especially the subtle, ironically, the more subtle, the impact on other people, their Yiras Shamayim, you know, their Shmiras Samit, whatever it is, very hard to contain that. So, Chilul Hashem is Chayiv Yehori Bal Yavar. So one way to look at it is that the Gimel Averos are also Chilul Hashem. They're Chilul Hashem, even Betzina, if the word gets out, or if anybody knows, or even just for the person who, even for the Anos maybe, you know, who knows that you're willing to give up your religion, you know, to do the worst of religious crimes, that's a Chilul Hashem. The Rambam, as we know, speaks about the dinim of Yehori Bal Yavar in Parakei Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, which is the chapter of Chilul Hashem. I mentioned last week, I think. Mostly it seems to be, this view is more complicated than that, but that seems to be the more general thrust in Sefer Mitzvahs as well. But I think I mentioned this last week when we started talking about this, the Ramban in Mechamos doesn't take that position. The Ramban says that the reason the Gimel Averis are Yehori Bal Yavar is because of their Chomer, that Chai Ben Velo Shiyamos Ben doesn't apply to the Gimel. Like I said before, I mean, the Chinuch explains that's also a quality of life issue. It's not that they necessarily that the three are worth more than life. It's that the three make life, you know, not worth living, basically. They compromise life. That's two perspectives also. The point is that, what is Tosis really trying to say? Tosis seems to be saying the following. One might have thought that Karka Olam can have two effects. On one level, and this is what Tosis is saying, the easier way to understand Karka Olam, more obvious way to understand the factor of Karka Olam, is as a factor of Maisa Aveira. You did the Maisa Aveira B'Kum Va'Aseh, or you did the Maisa Aveira B'Shev Al Taisa. Right? It's a different kind of violation as a Maisa Aveira. You're passive. You let it happen. The quality of that Aveira is different. So what Tosa is saying is, I think the Gimel Averos, unlike the Rambam, let's say, is not about Chilul Hashem, but like the Ramban, it's about Chumras Aveira. So Karka Olam is understandable. But even in Chilul Hashem itself, namely in Farhesya, where it's Afilu Mitzvah Kala, even then, Museyu Harig Val Yavor? What about Karka Olam? Hamash Malan, that's the quarter's question. Vahester Farhesya. Right? Even Farhesya, there's a factor. And that's where Abaya Barabba, one of them says, Abaya says, Karka Olam Shai. So what's fascinating is that the Rambam, in light of this, who does mostly, again it's complicated, take a position of Chilul Hashem as the basis even of the Gimel Averos, never quotes the factor of Karka Olam. Not in Parakei Hilchos Yehori HaTorah, not in Sefer HaMitzvos. The Rambam omits Karka Olam. Rav Chaim makes note of it. I wonder why. So I always thought, possibly, because the same shikul, the same calculation that went through Tosis went through the mind of the Rambam, except that he didn't accept the Maskana. You know, he said, you know, if I had really thought that the only issue of the Gimel Averos, or the primary issue of Gimel Averos, was the Maisa Aveira, the Narchanami, Karka Olam's a factor. But Abaya thinks it's a factor, right? But maybe we don't paskin like Abaya. Maybe we paskin like Rava, who gives a different answer to the Esther Farhesia question, which is Hanas Atzmon Shiny. So I think the Rambam omits Karka Olam be Lishitaso. Having said that, so let me mention, I mentioned the third answer. Let me just finish with this, and then next week we'll start with the Avela Sugya. Miri says here, based on the Balamor and Sanhedrin, that the reason Lidrish Lahud Ones Shari is because Hanas Atzmon Shiny. So where does that come from? And how come the other people don't give that answer? Meaning the Anos isn't doing this for theological purposes, right? He's doing it for hedonistic purposes. We're not rewarding his hedonism, don't get me wrong. But if it's Hanos Atzmo, it's not Yehari Gvayavar. Where does that come from? That's Rava's answer to the Gemara in Sanhedrin's question, V'ha Esther Farhes Yehavah. The Gemara says, V'ha Esther Farhes Yehavah. Right? So Abaya said Karka Olam, and Rava said, Hano Asatzmo Shine. That the Rambam does quote, by the way. Oh. So why do I say it's a Balamor and a Meiri? It's a Gemara. Rambam quotes Rava too. The answer is the Gemara quotes it to answer the question of Farhesia. The Rambam quotes it in the context of Farhesia. Question is, does that answer of Hanos Atzmon apply also to the Gimel of Eros? To Gili Arayos? Okay, the Gemara didn't say anything about Karka Olam in Gimel of Eros. Bali Tosis did. Bali Tosis said, oh, the Gemara is so certain about it, they didn't even bother to ask. They only asked in Farhesia because they knew already that everybody would agree about Gimel of Eros. But the Rambam doesn't agree in Gimel of Eros. He doesn't agree in either. Okay, fine. Similarly, what?
Every Aras is in
Asatzmon. Well, no, that doesn't have to be in the motivation. It doesn't have to be in the motivation, right? It can be an Anos. I'm not saying whether there is Anos Atzmon, but the issue is the motivation. I mean, it's an interesting point. The Ramban says against the Balamor, number one, he says, isn't Anos Atzmon, you know, typical to... But he also asks another question. The sugya says in Psachim, but Komus Rappin Chutz Miatzei Hashem. A couple of years ago, we learned Psachim. We discussed it, meaning therapy. The only medicine, right? The only medicine that's going to work is an avodah zarah tree. So that's the other sugya. One of the other sugyas of Yari Vayavar, right? But Komus Rappin Chutz Miatzei Hashem, or Gili Arayos, or you know, avodah zarah. These are not can't be used for. Even a deathly illness as therapy, right? So the Ramban says, when he attacks the Balamor, he says, I don't understand, the whole Sugim Psachim proves you're wrong. The guy's dying, so, well, you know, why is he... What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the answer, I think the Meiri's answer to that is very simple. The question is, the Ramban didn't realize it, or the Ramban realized it, but he just didn't think that was important. And that is, whose Hano are we talking about? The Nenas or the Anos? Right? In the case of Pikuach Nefesh, Bakomus Rapid, we're talking about the Nenas. Here we're talking about the Sugin Sanhedrin, we're talking about the Anos. Right? That's similar to the answer that I'm getting. It's not the question whether there is Hano, the question is what's the motivation here. Anyways, the point is that obviously the and that's where the Ramban goes on to say, and the whole thing doesn't make any sense to me, because why are the Gimel Averas singled out anyway? They're singled out because of Chumras Avera. So it the Chumras Avera is affected by Hanos Atzmo. And here, what Tosas says about Karka Olam certainly doesn't apply. Now, Tosas is trying to make the point that at least in terms of the Mais Avera, maybe Karka Olam is more obvious than the Gimel Averos and more of a Chiddush in Farhesia. But everybody will agree, I think, that the answer, Hanos Atzmo, nothing to do with lightening the Mais Avera, it only has to do with lightening the Chil Hashem. As people understand that if the Anus is doing this for reasons of Yetzer Hara, he's not testing you theologically, it's less of a Chil Hashem. Right? But that it should apply to the Gimel of Eros is shocking. So that's why it seems like the Balamor, the Meiri, that whole group, the Raivid, that whole group are basically saying, you know what? The Gemilah of Eretz are also Midincha Lashem.
Can I assume that Shfich HaSdom is the only absolute without any nuances on that?
So the Balamor and the Raivid both seem to say that, you know, Shfich HaSdom doesn't have a heter of Hanas Atzma. But the Ravi Avad, the father-in-law of the Raivid, seemed to say, maybe even then.
So how would that work?
Yeah, so that's... So the Raivid says, Shvich HaSdamin doesn't have it. He says, but there's also no Hechatimtzi. So some of the other Rishonim, what do you think there's no Hechatimtzi? He, you know, he hires an assassin, you know, to get rid of his rival, you know, a little... It's Maisiv Shemachol Yom, right?
York,
no Hechatimtzi.
Yeah.
What?
In New York.
Or at least it used to be. Right, I think we're riding a win streak of no murder still, or not?
No, it was finished.
Yesterday.
It's finished?
12 days.
All right. So we'll start a new win streak. Okay. So, anyways, so this is really touches on both of these, and all three of these answers touch on very big issues in Yahreg Val Yavar. And we'll continue next week on the first question.
Is that the motivation of the headman that's interfering with the marriage?
Yeah.
He's doing what for religious reasons to disrupt the kishas of the marriage rather than Hamas Asma?
Well, the Meiri is certainly assuming in his answer that that's not the case. He's assuming it's Hanas Atzma.
That's
just Hanas Atzma. Yeah. Not that he's trying to, you know, interrupt religiously. He's, you know, he's trying to exploit hedonistically. That's the assumption. Okay, we'll start with Chasson Avel next time. A sad story, but a fascinating one. Convergence of two opposite emotions.